Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our 2018 Holiday Book Show today in The Exchange, and whether you're listening this hour for books to give this season or get for yourself, we won't judge, because whatever your motivation, the year 2018 has lots to offer. Bestsellers, surprise breakouts, epic biographies, and cultural commentary. Today in The Exchange, favorite books of the year from two Granite State independent booksellers, and your favorites too. What's the best book you read this year? What kind of book are you still searching for, either for yourself or somebody else? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And just a reminder, the best books of the year, all the books that are mentioned during this conversation today, our guests' picks, the books you add to the conversation, will be put on our website a little bit later today. You can check it out after the show, nhpr.org/exchange. Our booksellers are Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, which just celebrated its 120th birthday on Thanksgiving weekend. Michael, nice to see you. You don't look 120. Happy birthday to Gibson's.
Thank you. Well, we'll let our listeners judge for themselves.
And we will put lots of photos on our Instagram and Facebook and so forth. Dan Chartrand is owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. And Dan, it's always great to see you. Thank you so much.
It's great to be here, Laura.
So, easy question to start off with, guys. Michael, your favorite book you read this year?
That's not an easy question. boy, I don't know. You just read you read so many books. Golly, that is a tough question.
It is a tough question.
You've stumped the band. I really liked a first novel called Bearskin.
Okay.
And I liked Florida by Lauren Groff, a collection of short stories. I liked so many books
Bearskin
this year.
Bearskin and Florida.
Yeah, I also liked the new Howard Mansfield book, which is a short classic, I think, that we'll talk about during the show. And Cy Montgomery's book, which we'll also be talking about during the show. And I also liked, okay, let's move on.
All right. Dan, how about you? Favorite book you read this year?
Well, my personal favorite is...
Knowing you can't pick one favorite.
Right. But, we'll do this as an artifice, okay? My favorite book this year was Keith O'Brien, who's a New Hampshire author, Fly Girls, How Five Daring Women Defied All Odds and Made Aviation History. It's an amazing book.
We had him on the show.
He's written this book that's extremely aspirational in terms of detailing just how many battles these women fought to get into the seat and fly these planes, and how great they were, and how their legacy has been lost, and now it's being resurrected. So that's why this is my favorite book, because it's really resurrecting some long-lost history that's very important for aviation and for our country.
Well, and just to do a little promotion, so if folks want to know more about that book in particular, we did interview Keith maybe a month or two ago. You can go on our website, nhpr.org/exchange, and check out the web post for that show. And then tomorrow on The Exchange, we've got another sort of hidden history, newly declassified documents from the National Security Agency and so forth. Talk about the role women codebreakers played in World War II.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm just almost done with the book myself for tomorrow's show. And this is, people don't know about this, but tens of thousands of very young American women broke these codes, saved thousands and thousands of American lives, anticipating German and Japanese movements during the war. So that's another one that we'll probably talk about.
I love the way we're uncovering the early history of women in STEM fields, whether it's technological fields like aviation or science. It's a wonderful trend.
Well, and you mentioned Howard Mansfield. We also interviewed Howard about his new book. So, again, you can go to our website. Go ahead, Michael. Yeah.
I was just going to ask you, is it fair to ask you what your favorite book was this year,
Oh,
Laura?
Darn it.
See?
Give me a minute to think about that. I'll think about that during the station break.
Okay, yeah, it's not easy.
That was a nice bit of turnabout there.
Yeah, well.
It's not easy. So how about, Dan, among your staff, is there one that just everybody on your staff at Water Street said, oh, I love this?
This is there's a book by Rebecca Mackay called The Great Believers. It's a novel. And our greatest and best reader is our store manager, Steph Schmidt. And this is one of her favorite novels. And the Times named it one of their five best as well. And I just want to read a little bit of what she's written about this book, because no one writes about their reading better than Steph. She said, this is such a beautiful book. Mackay captures the AIDS epidemic in Chicago just the way a good ally should, with compassion, outrage, honesty, and huge amounts of research and acknowledgments. It feels close to the author's heart. But she has also written just a dynamite story of friendship, love, innocence, and betrayal among a group of friends at the center of the crisis. It's also a story of art and the long shadow of memory. Oh, and there's a whole other storyline about motherhood and forgiveness and not being able to forgive, and Paris. And she puts Paris in capital letters. It's all woven together seamlessly and beautifully with lovely writing and indelible characters. It's a full story with a big cast of characters, one to curl up with. It's heartbreaking, yet also joyful. I loved it.
Give us the name again, Dan.
The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay. When you walk into Water Street Bookstore during this holiday season, you will be presented with this novel. we're really going over the top.
Wow. How about your staff, Michael?
Well, a lot of people, I was trying to think of what my answer to that question would be, and I think it's the new novel by Kate Atkinson called Transcription. And it's got a lot of enthusiastic reads at Gibson's. It's a World War II novel, which is, you know, it seems to be a little bit of a trend right now. And I don't know if trends appear just randomly or not. But, you know, you have War Light by Michael Ondaatje, which is another great book about the war. But, you know, Transcription is a story of an 18-year-old young woman named Juliet Armstrong, who's recruited reluctantly into the world of espionage, and she works for an obscure department of the British Intelligence Agency, and she's tasked with figuring out the comings and goings of the fascist sympathizers, and eventually she's given like a pseudonym, and she goes to infiltrate, and you know, it's for fans of Ian McEwan and Graham Greene and A.S. Byatt. And she's a great writer. She's a beautiful writer. People just rave about the quality of her prose. And it's a great story. She did a lot of research for it, but she says that for every fact she put in the book, she made something up. And you know, if she did her job, then you as the reader won't really be able to know which is which. So
again, the number for you to join us during our holiday book show today in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. We're looking at some of the best books of 2018. And as always, all the titles that come up in our conversation, Dan's picks, Michael's picks, also any books that you happen to mention will be put on our website later today. You can look at it, nhpr.org/exchange. You can give us a call now, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. What was your favorite book that you read this year? What kind of book are you looking to give or get this holiday season? Again, let's hear from you. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter is NHPR Exchange. So just a little side question, guys, and then we have so many more books to talk about. Dan, what do we know about Americans' reading habits right now? How much are people still reading books? Because I have to say, I just came back from a lot of travel. So I was in a lot of airports and train stations and so forth, and didn't see a lot of people cracking open books.
So a couple things on that. And you were nice enough to kind of give us this prompt earlier so we had time to think about it. What you saw on that airplane, there were a couple things going on, or the airplanes you were on. First of all, no one's bringing their e-reader traveling with them anymore. If they're reading text on a device, it's going to be on their smartphone. So
because why travel with, you know,
your why
phone
travel with
and
multiple
a bulky
devices,
e-reader, sure.
Right? So yeah. No one's going to do that. But what you probably also saw, but didn't realize you were seeing, is that if people have their earbuds in, there's a huge trend for people to listen to books while they're traveling, but also not just on airplanes, but while they're driving. And it's just become the largest growth sector of our industry: audio downloads. And As independents, we've moved into this area by partnering with a company called Libro FM. If you go to our websites, you can sign up to use them instead of a larger company's Audible. Amazon owns Audible. For those that want to support independent, they can sign up with Libro FM through our website.
So is that
L-I-B-R-O.
Okay. Yeah.
And then FM. And just go to our website. There's a button there to click on to sign up. We get a little bit of, you know, every purchase. So it helps to support us. But really what we're seeing is a huge spike in audio listening. And then we are seeing people coming in and purchasing the book that they've listened to because they want to put it on their shelf as a book that they've read, in quotation marks. And this is just a trend in the industry that's become very prominent and very important. So that's kind of what you were seeing on that airplane. But admittedly, there's a ferocious competition for eyeballs. And it's not just reading. Obviously, there's people that are doing, you know,
right.
Watching
yeah, that,
video.
That's a point I wanted to make.
Go for it.
Well, you know, I mean, reading, most people, unfortunately, don't really read very often. And it's always been true. Now, when you see people on their devices on a plane, they're probably not engaging with the text anyway. Some of them are. But if you see somebody with a book, they are engaging with the text. So you can kind of tell what folks are doing. If you go to the beach where screens are less, you know, less adaptable, then you will see what people are actually doing. They're either reading a magazine, they're trying to squint at their devices, but they can't really make it work because the sun's too bright. So you'll get a better picture, I think, than on an airplane of whether people are really reading or not. It's hard to tell.
I came across a recent report by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, so not just a random poll, but a very large sample size where people fill out detailed time diaries. And BLS found the share of Americans who read for pleasure on any given day has fallen by more than 30% since 2004. So I was kind of struck by that. And yet
it's difficult.
Yeah.
There's so many distractions. There's so many shiny objects and toys out there that books do, as Dan said, compete for eyeballs. They do compete for attention. You know, there's always something great on Netflix. You know, I mean, the studies have shown that, you know, all this competition, it's not just impacting the world of books, it's the world of all kinds of interactions.
Just one final thought, though. There are a couple trends, and that's definitely a trend. 30% sounds right to me. I would not dispute that. But there are a couple trends that are working in our favor. First of all, the book craft, the book industry, is getting better at competing. They are.
Competing for eyeballs,
competing
for people's attention.
Eyeballs,
competing for attention,
and creating a lifestyle around the idea of reading. We've gotten much more sophisticated about that. So
all up and down the channel, from the publishers to the booksellers,
that's
everywhere.
Right.
That's right.
So that's
events
one trend.
At your stores, encouraging clubs and so forth. Is that what you're talking about, Dan?
That's part of it. But for instance, the New York Times has always released their top 10 right at the beginning of December. They did an hour-long podcast. Videocast of those top 10 books with the various editors in the New York Times Book Review talking about why they chose those 10 books. They've never done this before. It was a huge smash. It was like a huge hit. So this is just the type of thing that our business is getting much savvier about. And we as independents are uniquely, that this idea of reading as a lifestyle, we as independent bookstores have really been there all along. So that trend is coming right where we are. It's coming right
sort of
by
full
our bookstore.
It's like accidentally we look hip, right?
if you stand
hey, look at this,
your ground,
it's a book.
Yes. If you stand your ground and stay where you are, eventually you'll be hip again.
That's right.
Well,
are.
And there is a small but dedicated slice of readers. Both of your stores, you know, are doing well. Michael, you had a big expansion a couple years ago. So I'm not sounding the death knell of reading, but I did notice this when I was traveling, and then I looked up some numbers, and you know it is going down. So
it's always
I want to
been
ask
a little
you about
bit,
that.
It's always been a little bit of a boutique business. You know, it's not the majority of people that are serious readers.
The final thought, final trend. There's a huge upswing in people that want to live this reading lifestyle in their 20s and early 30s, and they're the first wave of Harry Potter readers. And that's part of this reading lifestyle.
That's a good point. Cool. Yeah, and that it's kind of counterintuitive because you'd think that these would be digital natives that live on their devices, and yet they're really actually out there grasping for real physical experiences because they get tired of all the screens.
Wow. Super interesting.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you guys about
that. It's a great conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our number
asking.
For you to join our conversation is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Garrett in Londonderry sent us an email, guys. Garrett says, so many good books this year. One of my favorites, Garrett says, was Where You'll Find Me by Ty Gagne, another author who we had on the show, which was incredible. That
yeah.
was an incredible story. A compelling nonfiction book of tragedy and heroism set in the White Mountains. That has to do with the death of Kate Matrosova, who was an incredible athlete, an
she
incredible
was.
Climber,
yeah.
got caught in a bad storm on Mount Washington and,
yeah,
and
that's
died.
Been an incredibly popular book, and congratulations to Ty Gagne for such a success with an independently published title. We had over 200 people in our store when he came to visit. That was an amazing event.
Yeah, well, thank you for mentioning that, Garrett, because, again, we had Ty on the show. So go ahead, Dan, real quick.
The follow-up for Garrett is Dan Chesney's book, which Michael recommended in the summer reading show. Dan Chesney has written The White Mountain, Rediscovering Mount Washington's Hidden Culture. And so that's his follow-up.
Yeah, and he was on the show, too, Dan Chesney, and his name is... spelled a little difficult, so yeah.
S-C-C-Z-E-S-N-Y.
All right. Well, Garrett, thank you for the email. You can send us an email to what the favorite book you read was this year or what kind of books you're interested in picking up as the year closes out. You can email us like Garrett did, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Or give us an old-fashioned phone call, 1-800-892-6477. Let's talk a little bit more about local authors, since we've talked about Ty Gagne, Dan Chesney. Michael, I'll turn to you first. Since you mentioned the dynamic duo of New Hampshire authorship, Howard Mansfield and Cy Montgomery.
Well, they're just a wonderful writing couple. You know, I think... it's easier for more people to understand Cy's project. She goes out into the world seeking adventure, you know, and interacting with her fellow creatures. And, you know, she's written a lot of marvelous books. She's one of the best writers I've ever encountered. I remember reading The Spell of the Tiger, I guess when it came out 20 years ago, and just being blown away. And ever since then, I've been a fan.
Her Octopus book really
yeah,
grabbed a lot of people.
The
a lot
octopus,
of people said, huh,
yeah.
Octopus? And
I know.
We learned a lot from that book.
We sure did. And what Cy's done next is she's written a sort of a memoir, How to Be a Good Creature, because someone asked, you know, what's the goal? I mean, why interact, you know? Why do what you do? And she says, well, you just want to learn how to be a good creature. And so she's told her life story through her relationship with you know, animals along the way.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, including her dog Thurber now, who came to the store with her when she came to visit.
How about Howard Mansfield, the other half of that duo? You're a big fan, Dan.
Well, two things. First of all, Cy Montgomery she's been discovered nationally, so... Absolutely. But Cy has said, I've heard her say in public, that a lot of the underpinning and the theory behind her work, you know, preserving and appreciating the animals that live on this planet with us, is really based on her husband Howard's work. Howard has written extensively about preservation and replacement and why, when his books come out, we don't all stop in the state of New Hampshire, take a state holiday, and all read it at the same time. We should have a state book club every time Howard publishes a new book.
We could call it Howard Mansfield Day.
Yeah, exactly. This guy is the most underread author in New Hampshire, and he's one of the most important authors.
It's because he's so hard to categorize.
I think that's right.
Yeah, what shelf do you put Howard Mansfield on in one of your stores?
Let's start with The Habit of Turning the World Upside Down. Let's everyone just take a break. Read this amazing book.
Well, and I think I was on vacation when Howard came on the show, but The Exchange also did interview Howard about that book. So you can check that out, too, on our website. You can also send us an email while you're there. It's exchange@nhpr.org or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's our holiday book show, looking back at the favorite books of 2018. Let us know what books made your list this year as a favorite, or what books you're still looking for as the year closes out. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And one more time, a reminder, all the titles that come up in our conversation today, along with our guests' picks, will be put on our website a little bit later. Check it out at nhpr.org/exchange. Our guests are Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter, and Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. And gentlemen, just before the break, we were talking about local authors, and there's a few more who had really big, important books this year. Michael, Donald Hall died this year, longtime poet and essayist. He had a last book, right?
He did. I saw that it was on Dan's list,
okay, so
I didn't put it on mine, but we both can talk about it. It's called The Carnival of Losses, Notes Nearing 90. And as Don aged, and I think he struggled to come to terms with this. He wasn't able to write poetry anymore. And he was able to write shorter and shorter prose pieces. And so the Carnival of Losses includes some of his last essays, and some of them are just a couple of pages long, appreciations of different poets. But what they are, they're perfect examples of what they are. I mean, I'm sure that each one of these short pieces went through like 30 drafts, knowing Don, and each one is word perfect because he never lost the instinct of a poet. He just lost the ability to write poetry. And so it's a marvelous collection. And I think, the thing to say about Don is Don, the man is gone, but Donald Hall, the author, will live on.
Yeah. Another local author who's caught your attention, Dan.
Well, I just want to, if I can quickly, Mark DeCarteret, former poet laureate of Portsmouth, has written about Donald Hall. Hall has gone through more versions than Microsoft Word. He's an ageless griever and sage, verse guider and servant.
I don't
servant,
know how he'd feel about that comparison, but
carrying them out near perfectly. So this book by Donald Hall is as Michael said, is a great final tribute to everything.
There's
he's
a local
done.
Cookbook that you've got either on your list or Michael's
we
list. I can't remember.
It.
You
we
both have it. Okay.
Marianne Esposito has. This is an interesting trend. Marianne Esposito is actually now working with New Hampshire publisher Peter E. Randall Publishing in Portsmouth, and she's long time being published by New York City houses, national publishers, and she decided to take control of her intellectual property and work with Deirdre Randall at Peter Randall, and they created a beautiful book, and she sold out her first printing. She's going back for more. Marianne is the woman who has the longest running cooking show on public television.
Wow.
Yeah, she was one of the founders of that whole genre.
Yeah. You know. Actually, it's run longer than Julia Child. She's just amazing. And this is a beautiful book. She and Deirdre have created the most amazing book all about the different cuisines of Italy.
Yeah, it communicates just a love of Italian culture as much as it communicates delicious recipes. So it's a very important book.
Well, local authors we could probably talk about for an hour, but I do want to make sure we get some really important nonfiction books in there because there's some stuff that's just on every single window of every bookstore everywhere. So I want to talk about that. And also, obviously, as a mom, I want to know about kids' books and young adult books. So we should talk about that, too. But our listeners are really jumping in, too, guys. So let's go to them. Sharon emails, I use my Kindle all the time when I travel. I would hate reading a book on my small iPhone screen. Same for outside. Difficult to read on an iPhone or iPad in the sunlight. I know I'm not alone in this, at least in the older crowd. Sharon, thank you for that. That refers to what we talked about earlier with people's reading habits and how they're changing. Another listener says, for those women out there looking for an inspiring memoir for yourself as a gift, I'd like to recommend Old in Art School, a memoir of starting over by award-winning historian Nell Irvin Painter. She left a chaired professorship at Princeton to go to art school, wow, embracing a new field and a new life at age 64. Our emailer says, not only is it a fun read, it proves you're never too old to learn and try something new in your life. Also great for book groups. This emailer also says, I often give picture books as gifts to adults. The new one that I have given this year is the beautiful Julian is a Mermaid by Jessica Love. Okay, Great recommendations from that listener. Cindy in Harrisville says, I recently started a PhD program and made the decision at the start to make sure I read for pleasure alongside the thousands of pages of academic reading I need to be doing. When I did my undergraduate degree, the volume of academic reading really soured my relationship with the written word, and it took me years to repair it. I don't want that to happen this time, Cindy says. I've enjoyed Homegoing by, I'm not going to say this name right, Yagyasi? Thank you. G-Y-A-S-I. And similarly, Pachinko by Min Jin Lee. And Cindy says, I look forward to a collection of poetry, Milk and Honey by Rupi K-A-U-R. I'm not sure if I'm saying that. Okay. Yeah. Cindy, great. And I can totally relate to what she's saying. I know you guys have heard me say this before. I have to do a ton of reading for this job.
You don't want to let it kill your,
that's right,
the pleasure that you find,
so,
if you have to do it for the job. Yeah,
fiction only. And yeah, people now know, don't give Laura a nonfiction book for Christmas, my goodness, because she's not going to read it. So
yeah.
I really appreciate what you're saying, Cindy. Thank you.
I want to endorse the picture book Julian is a Mermaid has been an important book promoting diversity and acceptance and just showing kids, you want the books to be both windows and mirrors. That's the whole thing that comes out of, I think it's originally from the library world, but I think we've adopted it to diversity in books. And Julian is a Mermaid is a delightful picture book, just showing all different kinds of childhoods.
Wow. Dan?
That's a book that we've sold very well also, so it's a great recommendation.
Is it really for kids or is it for adults? Cindy said she gives it to adult friends.
It's a picture book. It's a great book for just raising awareness about diversity.
Well, the thing about picture books, too, is, it has to be tolerable for the adults to read over and over again.
Yeah,
if it's going to be there for the kids.
Yeah.
Also, I want to point out, so we're on the record on this show as saying 64 is old.
That's just what our emailer said.
Okay, well, I'm a few years away, but all right, okay.
I think the emailer said you're never too old to try something new.
I think that's the way I'm going to look at it, too.
Thanks for those comments. That's great. Again, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So Rachel is emailing, and she wants to talk about young adult books. Rachel says, I mostly read young adult MG, what's MG, guys?
Middle grade.
Middle grade, okay. Or younger, both by myself and with my three young children. Rachel recommends Orphan Island by Laurel Snyder. She says she gasped at the ending. Wow, Rachel.
That's good.
Nutcracked by Susan Adrian. Spinning Silver by Naomi Novak. And Rebel the Sands by Alwyn Hamilton. Rachel, I read lots of YA, too, and I love it, love it, love it, love it. It moves quickly. It's fun. So thank you for those. Do you want to give us a couple of your favorite YA young adults, Dan, for the year?
There's four sequels to popular YA books, and I'm just reaching to grab some books.
Sure.
Here. Someday by David Levithan is a sequel to Every Day, which was very popular.
These are all on your list, Dan, right? So they'll be on the website.
We have a huge display in the store.
Okay.
A Map of Days is the fourth novel in the Miss Peregrine series. Marie Lu has Wild Card, which is a sequel to a very popular War Cross. And there was one more, but I'm going to skip that and talk about another staff pick, The Loneliest Girl in the Universe by Lauren James. This is a great YA book. It's basically a YA version of The Martian, which was a very popular book and made into a movie, but it's with no equations, and it's much more lyrical than that book. So this is another staff pick by Steph Schmidt.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael. Young adult.
Young adult. Well, I've got a couple of recommendations from some staff people at Gibson's Booksellers who are very enthusiastic about this category. And, the YA category, just it shifts. It is whatever you want it to be. You can be a young adult at any age.
Just referencing that earlier email,
right?
Who
says,
you're never too old to try something new.
Ryan from Gibson's recommends The Forgetting by Sharon Cameron. It's set in a small village where every 12 years, everyone's memories are reset overnight. No one knows why. It's just something that occurs.
Wow.
And the main character has flashbacks from before the previous forgetting, and she sets off an adventure to find out more.
People's memories are wiped out overnight, and they start fresh every day.
Yeah, Ryan's been hand-selling the heck out of that one. She also loves Rainbow Rowell, she wanted me to mention. Heather wanted me to talk about a book called Children of Blood and Bone. The author is, she's like 24 years old. And her name is Tomi Adeyemi. And the best, she says, if you want to describe this book in one sentence, it's like the movie Black Panther with magic.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. And so, and also, I think you were wondering about books for boys.
I was. And I have to say, I mean, again, people who listen to the show know I have boys, and they walk into a bookstore and they look at the young adult section sometimes. And just being a little critical here, they see a lot of, you know, books that seem geared towards girls, lots of like lovey stuff and some pink. And they just, the last time I went with one of them, they were like, nah, there's nothing here for me.
Yeah, well, they should look a little deeper, and
yes,
also ask a bookseller.
Yes.
Because go into an independent bookstore and say, you know, I'm a card carrying boy. What do you got?
Yeah, a lot of the books for them are in the they're in the fiction section, in the adult section.
That one thing I want to talk about, Marcus Zusak, who wrote The Book Thief, I think 10, 12 years ago, has a new book out called Bridge of Clay, which is about five brothers who kind of raise themselves after the death of their mother, and they want to solve the mystery of their father's disappearance. And that's got boy written all over it, and that's been a huge bestseller.
Dan, do you want to jump in on that again?
No, I think that as an industry, as the publishing industry doesn't do as good a job publishing YA for boys as for young women, or for young men as for young women. But again, there's a lot of crossover adult. And I think of The Martian. We hand-sold The Martian to far more young adult men, young men, than we did to adult readers. It was just a great book for them to read.
I think the movie was sort of a gateway for them to...
Yeah, but even before
even
the movie
before,
came out.
Yeah.
So ask a bookseller, because it may not be in that section.
Yeah,
it
maybe
may be
somewhere else.
In the adult fiction or science fiction section.
Right.
Well, and I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Americans' reading habits, again, hard data from Bureau of Labor Statistics, Pew, Gallup, you know, not just some random silly survey. And those surveys also find that women read a lot more than men, and young women read a lot more than young men. And so, you know, if you're a bookseller or a book publisher, you're going to go where the eyeballs are. So it's kind of a downward spiral, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You want to make sure you're not leaving out any member of your audience.
One of the reasons that we focus so carefully on nonfiction is that we want to build and balance, have gender balance in our store in terms of our patron base.
All right.
And men tend to trend more towards nonfiction.
And there's a lot of cool nonfiction that we should talk about, guys. But let's go back to our listeners for just a sec, because, again, people are calling in, sending their emails with their favorite books of 2018. We'd love to hear from you. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. exchange@nhpr.org. Marianne's on the air from Stratum. Hi, Marianne. Go ahead. Thanks for calling in.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
I wanted to call and recommend two books for young people written by New Hampshire-based authors. The first, picking up where Dan left off about nonfiction books, a book by Sandra Neal Wallace, an ESPN broadcaster turned writer, who wrote a picture book this year, illustrated by the extraordinary Brian Collier, called Between the Lines. And it's all about Ernie Barnes, who was a professional football player but also an artist all his life, and how he left football to become an artist. And he was one of the founding artists that were a part of the Black is Beautiful movement. And so it's a book that's an extraordinary life story. It's a rumination on masculinity, but it's also just a work of art with Collier's illustrations and a really gripping story that I think appeals to both boys and girls and adults and children. I chair a book award committee for the National Council of Teachers of English for nonfiction books for children, and Between the Lines was our winner this year. And I just wanted to throw in another word for Lita Judge's Mary's Monster, which is a verse historical novel about the life of Mary Shelley, and it's really genre-defining. You look at it and you think it's a graphic novel, but it's really an illustrated picture book that's novel length and told in verse and just extraordinary.
Mary's Monster. Thank you so much, Marianne, for calling in. Guys, any thoughts there?
Well,
Dan?
First of all, Marianne is an expert in children's and young adult literature. She's a professor that teaches. So thank you for calling in and lending us your expertise, Marianne. I really appreciate it.
Well, and we're talking about books for boys, young adult, and so forth, and local authors. And another perfect example of that is Paul Durham, who I believe comes from your area.
Right.
Dan wrote the Luck Uglies series. The main character is a girl, but like boys love this book too. It's a perfect book for everybody. That's right. Love the book too.
And he just published another book in the spring that starts another series. So think it's going to be a trilogy, or maybe it's a standalone. I could have that wrong. All right. Apologize if I do.
Mike, you want to jump in?
Well, I'll tell you, I think I want to segue to a book that's on my list for fiction, but I think it can also go YA. It's a short story by George Saunders, who wrote Lincoln in the Bardo. It's called Fox 8, and it was originally published as an ebook in 2013, but now it's been repackaged with beautiful illustrations. As a small hardcover that actually could be a stocking stuffer. It's a fable written from the point of view of a fox, Fox 8, who's somehow learned how to speak human or human. You know, it's very idiosyncratic spelling because the fox doesn't quite know how to spell. But it's a story about what happens when their habitat is destroyed by a mall. And, you know, it's a story that can be for kids, it can be for adults. It's a fable with a moral, and I really loved it. I read it a few times, and you know, you just keep finding something new in it. And it's all about it's about ethics and environmentalism.
Is it Fox 8 as in I ate breakfast, or Fox 8 like the number 8? Okay,
Fox 8, the number 8.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
One of you mentioned that there seemed to be a trend of World War II books, and one of our listeners emailed. This person likes The Tattooist of Auschwitz by Heather Morris. Wow, that sounds amazing. Tom sent us an email. I'd like to mention a memoir, Keeping At It, by Paul Volcker, a personal hero of mine. He's former chairman of the Federal Reserve and our nation's premier public servant. Tom says, at a time when we are losing so many esteemed leaders, it's refreshing to read of someone's commitment to serving the public. Volcker could have easily used his talents to make billions on Wall Street, and instead chose to follow his father's path and serve our nation. Tom says it's a remarkable story and may provide an incentive for others to serve our nation. Tom says Dan Chartrand, one of your guests, served Exeter as a selectman for many years and understands the importance of public service. And, of course, yesterday in the exchange, we had to bump the book show because we wanted to remember the public service career of former President Bush. So, yeah, go ahead, Dan.
Very importantly, you bumped the book show because recognizing that service is as Tom says, you know, it's the highest calling of a show like this. So I was delighted to step aside, and I know Michael was as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thank you for recognizing my public service. It was good to do, and it's good to be done.
Well, and I met Paul Volcker once, and it was so exciting. It was when I was working in D.C., and there was a conference at the place I was working, and all of a sudden the elevator opened, and this huge person came out, not fat, but just large, yeah, big bone, really yeah. tall, and yes, with the big cigar. Because yeah. It's in the 80s, you could still smoke a cigar at work, I guess. So
right.
It's fun for me, Tom, to reflect on that. Thank you for the email. Ellison Grantham says, this year's favorites include The Great Quake by Henry Fountain about the 1964 Alaska earthquake. Wow, I didn't know about that. And Ellis says, The Widow Clicquot by Tilar Mazzeo, who wrote the Eliza Hamilton biography, which we also did in the exchange. We did an interview with Tilar about Eliza Hamilton. That was really cool. Ella says, I listen to audiobooks a lot, partly because I can read more when doing chores and driving. Me too, Ellis. Thank you so much for that email and for the shout out for the Eliza Hamilton biography, because again, that's another book we did this year. Did you want to jump in real quick, Dan?
The recommendations from the listeners today.
It's fun.
It's at the
it?
Highest level yeah. ever. It's really wonderful.
Good job, yeah. listeners.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. Keep them coming.
Yeah.
Again, our email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can call, like Marianne did, 1-800-892-6477. So we've talked about local authors. We've talked a lot about fiction. We're going to turn to nonfiction in just a moment after the break. And maybe a little bit more on cookbooks, biography. There's a big, big biography that is everywhere this year. We'll talk about that coming up. Stay with us.
Every convention about how true crime stories usually unfold is upended.
That's why Bear Brook, the latest podcast from NHPR, has been downloaded more than a million times.
30 years ago this month, a mystery began.
It's the story of a decades-old cold case that's changing how murders will be investigated forever, reported by NHPR's own Jason Moon.
This story is not going to go the way you think it is.
Download it now or check it out at bearbrookpodcast.com.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's our annual holiday book show. What titles are topping many lists this year as the best books of 2018? give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. And a reminder, all the titles that come up in our conversation today, along with Dan and Michael's picks, will be put on our website a little bit later. Check it out at nhpr.org/exchange. So if you're driving down the road or your hands are full and you can't jot this stuff down, no worries. We'll put it all on the website for you. Again, it's nhpr.org/exchange. Okay, gentlemen, we have to talk about biography. This is a big, big year for biography. And as I mentioned earlier, I was traveling in November, and everywhere I went, not just in the United States, but in Europe, I saw Michelle Obama's book, Michael. This is huge, not just in the U.S., but in this country.
This book, in Europe. Yeah, I mean, this book took off so fast. It, you know, the gold standard in our industry is the distribution system of Penguin Random House, and they had a very hard time keeping up with this book. It's called Becoming by Michelle Obama. And I think the mark of a great holiday season for books is you've got just an amazing assortment of really strong titles, and then you have one or two really breakout titles that are also there, and that's what we have this year. Becoming is just out of the starting gate. I think it's sold 2 million copies already.
We haven't seen a book like this since the heyday of Oprah's book group, which was back late 90s, early aughts.
Yeah.
The sales rate on this book and the, as Michael said, Penguin Random House is the gold standard for printing and distribution of books. Michelle Obama broke the gold standard.
For 4 or 5 days. It's fixed.
Yeah. Wow. It's back in all the stores, but there were 4 or 5 days where basically no one had it.
Really?
And that's very rare for Penguin Random House.
Because we all tried. We thought we were getting ahead of it, and we were way behind.
Well, they thought they were ahead of it.
Yeah.
And, well, that's interesting.
Our first lady, she broke it.
Former first lady.
Former first lady.
Well, I was, people love to read that stuff, but I was surprised at how it was not just in, you know, the places I was in this country, but, you know, I was in Germany and France in November, and it was in the airports there, it was in the train stations, it was in the bookstores downtown. I mean, it was everywhere. Mm-hmm. So another biography on the other side of the political spectrum, a biography of Ronald Reagan. This one is getting, now Michelle Obama's is an autobiography, so it's a little different. But this biography of Reagan is getting great reviews. Reviewers say whether you're a fan of Reagan or not, they really like this book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's an important story in our history.
And a period piece of where America was at that time.
Yeah. And sort of the, you know, you can trace back to the beginnings of our current political moment. You know, it's like a detective story, just trying to figure out how we got to where we are. And the figure of Reagan is very important.
Wow. And we were talking about Reagan some yesterday when we talked about President Bush.
Yeah.
Sally Field has an autobiography out that's also selling well.
And it was named as one of the top 100 books by the New York Times.
Wow.
So the quality of that book is very high.
Yeah.
If I could jump in with a memoir by Sarah Smarsh called Heartland, and it's subtitled The Memoir of Working Hard and Being Broke in the Richest Country on Earth. And this is another pick by Steph, who describes it as a gorgeous book. Smarsh's prose is damn near poetry, and her family story is both crazy and all too normal an experience for the white working class farm families in the heartland of America.
I saw that on a lot of lists for this year.
Wonderfully written.
There's another history book by a favorite author that I know you guys love, Jill Lepore. What is the name of this one?
These Truths.
That's on both your lists. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, well, Jill Lepore is a professor of history at Harvard. And I actually, before this book came out, I saw her speak in New York at Book Expo, the Booksellers Conference. And she was on stage with comedians like Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally and Trevor Noah. And she was the funniest person on stage.
Oh, really? Wow.
They said it. Nick Offerman said, "I can't believe a bunch of professional comedians have just had their butts handed to them
by a Harvard professor. That's awesome.
And it was true. And These Truths, the title comes from, you know, it was the edit that that Franklin made instead of the words sacred and undeniable, these truths were self-evident. So in other words, they were appealing to reason rather than to belief. And it's a history of the United States, which is sort of it's a really broad project, obviously. But she does deliver. It's an essential book to understanding our history.
Wow. And there's another one. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, she wrote this book because it's the one-volume history of the United States. And looking at the issues that she cares about that she wanted to read. So it was very much a personal, self-driven project.
Isn't that how a lot of great books get written? I mean, there's somebody says, you know, I want to read this book and it doesn't exist yet, so I'm going to write it.
Right, right. There's another book, you know, in the midst of the Me Too movement and so forth, about women's anger, Dan.
That's on
Michael's list. Okay.
It is. Yeah. I mean, you know, we try not to be political on the book show, but I mean, you know, there are a few books that are just
out there. Well, yeah.
I mean, these are books that just touch on sort of the philosophical underpinnings of all the arguments of the moment. And this book is by Rebecca Traister, and it's a book called Good and Mad, The Revolutionary Power of Women's Anger. And I think it was an eye opener for me just to understand, you know, the history of just how it's been bottled up for so long and how it erupts and creates positive change every generation or two. And I think we're in that moment now, so it's important to understand. So this is an essential book as well.
There's a lot of bipartisan attention to the issue of prison reform, and I think there's a book about the prison system. Lots of people on the right and left concerned about this.
Right. Again, this is a recommendation from one of our newer booksellers, Courtney. It's a book by Shane Bauer, and it's subtitled The Reporter's Undercover Journey into the Business of Punishment. The U.S. has one of the largest populations of incarcerated individuals, and we're really starting to look at, you know, why that is and what we can do to maybe move away from that. So this is a great write-up on that.
A couple more recommendations from our listeners. Michelle says, this fall, a middle school literature teacher asked me to make curtains for her classroom with the theme of the book Freak the Mighty by Rodman Philbrick. I'd never heard of it, so I started reading it before creating the curtains. That's great, Michelle. Michelle says, it's a book geared toward middle schoolers, but I've got to say I was riveted, stayed up well past midnight to finish it, cried. It was a good story, quite powerful. Again, I love the young adult category and even some of the middle grade categories because it is great. Thank you so much, Michelle. Polly says, Watching the Lights Go Out by Tom Farman is a lovely book about a dog who's losing her sight and how she impacted her owners in thoughts of growing older. Highly recommend this book to all readers. Thank you, Polly. And Jeff says, author Elizabeth Hyde grew up in Concord, still comes back here fairly often. Her 2018 book is Go Ask Fanny. So some more recommendations from our listeners. Thank you for those. If we could flip back to fiction, guys, because I think there's a lot more on your list that we haven't gotten to yet. Dan, do you want to kick that off and give us a couple more fiction titles that your staff is loving this year?
There's a great, and it's a little bit lighter, but it's a translation by Philip Gabriel of Hiro Arikawa's The Traveling Cat Chronicles. Told by in the voice of the cat.
As the Traveling Cat Chronicles.
The Traveling Cat Chronicles, translated by Philip Gabriel. Hiro.
Okay, my
Arikawa.
Engineer Dan Colgan is a crazy cat person, and he's giving that the thumbs up.
Yeah. So it's translated from the Japanese, and it's basically told in the voice of the cat as the cat, and the person that it owns are traveling.
The person it owns.
Because cats own people, right?
Yes.
They're traveling. And to visit some old friends. So just a wonderful, wonderful book that just recently came out. And then also another Times 10 Best is a book called Washington Black.
Oh, that's on everyone's list this year. Yeah, go ahead and tell us real quick about that, Dan.
And I'm going to mangle the author's name, but it's S-E-E-S-I Edugan. A-E-D-U-G-Y-A-N. And again,
don't worry, we'll put that on the website. Yeah. So, yeah.
And again, another Steph pick, the incomparable Steph Schmidt.
It's about a boy, a slave on one of the Caribbean islands, right?
Barbados.
And he escapes.
He's 11 years old. He escapes.
In a hot air balloon.
Has adventures. Yes, in 1830.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's a lot of adventures, so, a real picaresque.
Yeah, it's like it's a picaresque, but it has to do with, you know, all the issues in antebellum society. And he flees with his master, who is sympathetic to his plight. And it's kind of, it reminds me a little bit of Underground Railway.
Colson Whitehead's book, you mean?
Yeah. In that it's kind of remaking American history through the device of a novel.
Yeah, it also frames it with the history of like exploration and science
and
of the time.
Yeah.
So that's a fun read.
But that's on a lot of lists this year. Another one that's on a lot of lists is called, this may not be fiction, The Library Book. Which
it's not fiction.
Isn't a very sexy title, but people are super excited about this book, Michael.
Yeah, she wrote, this is Susan Orlean, who wrote The Orchid Thief, and it is nonfiction. It springs from a fire at the Los Angeles Public Library in 1986 that was hardly noticed at the time, believe it or not. I mean, it was appeared the next day in the New York Times on page 14 or something. But what she's done is she's gone back and says, what really happened there? And she uses it as a springboard to discuss just how libraries work, the history of libraries, the LA Library in particular, you know, what happens when books burn. I mean, why there was a suspect found in this particular case but never charged. She interviews librarians. It's a great book for people who enjoy history and reading and the history of reading. And it's a lot of fun.
Okay, well, and this again, that's nonfiction. Yeah, but
this was on both
for a book
of
about
our
arson, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, Susan Orlean is beginning, her career is beginning to remind me of John McPhee's career. One of those writers, whatever she chooses to write about, you're going to find fascinating because of her skill in developing the topic and the way she writes about it. Early in this book, the library book, there's the most amazing description of her visiting a library as a child with her mother and then not being a library goer anymore. And then coming back into a library later in her life and having a flashback to that experience with her mother in that library. It is some of the most gorgeous writing I've read this year.
Yeah, and the book is tied to her mother in a lot of ways,
Other fiction you want to make sure we get mentioned, Michael?
Oh, well, fiction. Let's talk about, there's a book that hasn't gotten as heavily reviewed, but it's called Bitter Orange by Claire Fuller. And I was trying to describe it the other day to somebody. I said, well, you know, if you really liked Ian McEwan's Atonement, but just wish it had been funnier. I mean, this is the
book
for you.
I don't think Atonement was funny.
It did, well, yeah, exactly. Although Ian McEwan has sort of a macabre sense of what's funny. And that exists in this book, too. It's set in originally in 1969, and there's a woman named Frances Jellicoe who's finally free of her domineering mother. She just buried her, essentially. She's commissioned to survey and write a report on garden architecture of an old English country house, and she meets a fascinating young couple, and weirdness just ensues. It's a novel that's kind of full of the, you know, I'd want to call it funny dread. You know, which is sort of like Atonement.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. So that's Bitter Orange by Claire Fuller.
Another one that was on a lot of lists this year, and I think it was on one of your lists, maybe Michael's, is There by Tommy Orange. Now, we talked about that in our summer book show, but that's still showing up kind of everywhere.
Again, this is another book that the Times had on their top 10 list just announced. And we did talk about it in the summer, but it's had real legs. It's a very important book.
I haven't gone back and reread it for probably like 7 or 8 months, but because I got an early read on it, and it's real. I just remember thinking it's the great Native American novel.
Yeah, it's a modern story.
It's a first novel. Yeah, all about. It is. It's about the current day status of Native Americans and about history and the challenge of history.
A young man of Cherokee heritage goes to some kind of conference in California and.
It's out west.
All sorts of things ensue. Go ahead, Dan.
I've got a historical novel. If one of the books that's really taken off since it came out in paperback is a historical novel called The Essex Serpent. If you've read and loved The Essex Serpent, you now need to read The Mermaid and Mrs. Hancock, another 19th century historical novel. I'll spare you the description, but just if you love The Essex Serpent, you need to read The Mermaid and Mrs. Hancock.
Well, and Kathy and Wilmot sent us an email, and I have to read this because Kathy says, my favorite book of the year was A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles. Great story, well written. The determination of the main character to endure and flourish was remarkable. The civility that he maintained was a true vacation from our national scene. For anyone looking to escape, I would love to hear your guests' comments. Kathy, that was my favorite book, too. Now, I can't remember if I read it this year or last year, but absolutely one of the favorite books that I've ever read in my whole life. Just fabulous. Yeah. And you guys have heard me talk about this before, so I won't go on and on. But it's a great book. Kathy, thank you so much. Go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to say it's one of those books that stayed in hardcover so long and people come in and say, well, I know I've seen it in paperback. Why don't you have it in paperback? It's not in paperback yet.
It's not in paperback
yet. The publisher has chosen not to release it. They've extended the window on the hardcover.
Yeah, I got it at the library and I think I had to wait like 10 weeks or something.
Yeah, the world record for hardcovers, I think, is Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Wasn't that in hardcover for like 10 years?
That book is getting
about going into finally went into paperback. Yeah.
Well, on Facebook, a listener commented, although it's been around for a bit, my favorite read this year was The Rise of the Rocket Girls. And Sharon mentioned that Circe by Madeline Miller is a favorite. So
which is a follow-up to Song of Achilles.
So. Right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much for those comments. I can't believe it, guys. We only have about a minute and a half left. What is the one book that you're hoping someone gives you, Dan Chartrand?
I always have to give myself books for Christmas. Everyone just assumes that they.
No one gives me books.
Because
occupational
hazard.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, how about the new year? I mean, the publishers always sort of whet your appetite for, okay, there's all these great books from 2018, but here's what we've got coming up in 2019. So what you got?
There is a book by one of my favorite authors who's a New Yorker writer, George Packer. He's written a book called Our Man, Richard Holbrooke and the End of the American Century. And, of course, Richard Holbrooke was the diplomat who really engineered the Dayton Accords that ended the Bosnian and Serbian and Croatian wars. I'm really looking forward to reading this. It just kind of landed on my stack in the last couple of weeks. So.
Yeah, really interesting.
That's coming out in the new year.
And a piece of history that we have maybe forgotten, many of us have forgotten about. Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, you know, I haven't had a chance. I've got a big pile of galleys for next year's books, and I haven't had a chance to go through them yet.
Well, so I can't imagine why. It's only the holiday season and a very busy time for you guys. So.
Yeah.
Any other books? And I want to let our listeners know that Dan and Michael always bring in piles of books, and it's so fun to look at them. We've got pictures on Instagram if you want to check them out. But any other books, Michael, that you want to make absolutely sure people know about?
Yeah, there's two very important works of nonfiction that I think people should pay attention to. One is there's a new Michael Lewis book called The Fifth Risk, which is all about the dangers inherent when people who don't believe that government can work become in charge of government. And it's not really it's not a political screed. It's a serious work just discussing that issue. There's a big biography of Frederick Douglass that's out, which people should consider for gifts also. And another work of history called The Poison Squad by Deborah Bloom.
Okay. Dan?
New UNH author Lucy E. Sollier is a professor at UNH. She's written an amazing book from Harvard University Press, Under the Starry Flag, and it's subtitled How a Band of Irish Americans Joined the Fenian Revolt and Sparked a Crisis Over Citizenship. It's a wonderful meditation on citizenship, immigration, and what it means to belong to a certain place. Very appropriate for right now.
Okay, and by a UNH author, so another New Hampshire author. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Good luck this holiday season. I really appreciate you coming in. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.